Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
And now the story of a factory running at full tilt for a half a century.
Twice a day, on his way to and from school, little Charlie Bucket had to walk right past the gates of the factory. And every time he went by, he would begin to walk very, very slowly. And he would hold his nose high in the air and take long, deep sniffs of the gorgeous, chocolatey smell all around him. Oh, how he loved that smell!
This factory did not create many jobs, but it did create millions of readers. When Roald Dahl's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory was first published in the U.S. 50 years ago this month, it was a bestseller right off the bat. How could you go wrong with a factory of yummy chocolate? Characters zany and strange with names like Veruca Salt, Augustus Gloop, Willy Wonka, Beauregard. You may not have heard of the characters Miranda Grope or Elvira Erstwhile, Clarence Crump, and Bertie Upside. They were in early drafts of the book when writer Roald Dahl was just starting out to become the legendary children's author we know of him as today. Writer Lucy Mangan brings those early days to life in her new book, Inside Charlie's Chocolate Factory, commissioned for the book's 50th anniversary.
It was Roald Dahl's second book for children. He was a well-established writer for adults, adult short stories, published in The New Yorker and all sorts of kind of Tony publications. And then he turned to writing for children once he had children and got very bored reading the usual children's books to them. And Charlie and the Chocolate Factory grew out of a bedtime story he was telling his two oldest. And he started to write it down, and then he sent a draft in to his publishers, and they loved it, said it needed some work, and he went away and worked on it. And we've got five still surviving drafts of the story before you get to the final published book that we all know.
And when you look at the drafts, what is it he's tweaking as he moves towards the final product?
Well, it's quite interesting, really, because he starts off actually with quite a formulaic story. It's called Charlie and the Chocolate Boy, the very first draft we've got. There's another draft we think he threw away because he read it out to his nephew, and his nephew told him it was rubbish. so we think he threw that away. But the first surviving draft is this story called Charlie's Chocolate Boy, where there are 10 children, and 10 are chosen every week. It's just a regular thing. 10 get to go to the factory every week. And during this story, Charlie accidentally gets into a chocolate boy mold and gets made into a chocolate boy, supposedly hollow chocolate boy, gets delivered to Wonka's house because he has a wife and a son at this point, and is taken there as a present for the son, Freddy. And while he's there, perched on the mantelpiece inside this chocolate shell, foils a burglar in, is rewarded by Wonka with a sweet shop all of his own. So that's a very quite normal little adventure story. And then over the course of these drafts, you see him just gradually get rid of this boring stock stuff. And why don't we just go bigger, better, brighter, gum machine, square sweets that look round? And he's off and away.
The sense of characters that Roald Dahl has, and particularly in this story, you know, he's like Dickens. It's like he's got so many fantastic names. And if one doesn't work, he just tosses it away. And it moves on. What are the evolution of some of the characters here as we go across these drafts?
Well, they're all very lively and sort of full of colour and, as you say, Dickensian from the beginning. But because he's new to the craft of children's writing especially, he starts off with too many. As I say, he had the 10, and he has some great names. He has Violet Strabismus, which is the medical term for a squint, and he has Herpes Trout, which obviously has to go at some point.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. But they're all very funny, very vivid, and really it comes down to just being a sort of unwieldy number, so he has to kind of do the Faulkner thing and kill all your darlings. He gradually whittles them down to the five that we know today.
And I learned that Elvira Entwistle might have replaced perhaps one of the most famous characters from the eventual story.
Yeah, she was the original name for Veruca Salt. Violet was also Violet Glockenberry at one point, which also works really well.
Well, it's Huckenberry. Augustus Puttle. I would have gone with Glockenberry. I like that.
Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
So what changed about the characters in particular, and is there an example of a character evolution that shows, you know, where he was headed in his mind as to where this story was all about?
Well, it's interesting because actually, even in the very first draft, the main characters are there and actually don't change much. It's more a matter of of winnowing out the other ones, the slightly weaker ones, or the ones that, that overlap too much. I mean, he has a girl called Miranda Grope, renamed Miranda Mary Piker in the second draft, who is also sucked up the pipe like Augustus Pottle then Gloop is. And she ends up in the peanut brittle room. But she's just a different kind of spoilt. She's the child of kind of very liberal, progressive parents, which obviously Dahl is a kind of upper-class Englishman, you know, quite hated at the beginning of the 60s. And they won't punish her. They believe in freedom of expression and all the rest. But I think he thought that was too subtle a joke for a children's book. So Augustus gets to stay, you know, the gluttonous vice gets to stay. And this more, you know, in many ways funnier, but not for children, character has to go. So there's a lot of that going. You can see him weighing things in the balance.
Are there any characters that you wished had made it into the final draft?
Well, I do love Miranda Mary Piker with her awful parents. And when she, because I love that there's this great scene where she's running around the meadow around the chocolate river, and she grabs a handful of daffodils, and someone says, "Oh, are you going to give those to your mother?" And she says, "No, I'm going to gobble them up all myself." And her mother says, you see how interesting a child she is?" And you know those people. They're awful people. They should all be taken to a peanut brittle room and brittled to death.
I wonder if this manuscript would have the same fate today. I can't even believe that 50 years have gone by.
I know, I couldn't believe. When they said, you know, "Would you like to write this book to celebrate 50 years? I was like, it can't be. It is timeless. And I think that's because it's a modern fairy tale, and fairy tales are timeless. They don't date. They've got emblematic virtues and vices, and as long as humanity is walking around making the same horrible mistakes and doing the same wonderful things, we'll always respond to fairy tales. But it is amazing that the chocolate factory still has that lure, and we all want to go back and dive in again.
Lucy Mangan is the author of Inside Charlie's Chocolate Factory. Her book looks at the children's classic at 50 years young.
Support for The Takeaway comes from TIAA CREF, a financial services company helping to create financial outcomes that matter. Learn more at TIAA.org. TiVo, unifying cable, on-demand, and streaming apps like Netflix without the need to switch TV inputs, remotes, or user experience. Learn more at TiVo.com. And Moo.com, an online print and design company providing software and tools to create business cards, flyers, and triple-thick luxe cards. More at Moo.com.